This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to Fantasy Football Today, Dynasty. I am your host, Heath Cummings, and we're joined by a guest that you're probably familiar with now. If you're watching on YouTube, you see the face, you know who it is. It's Matt Waldman back again here on Fantasy Football Today, Dynasty. We talked before the draft, Matt, and I said, would you come back after the draft and kind of tell me what changed? And you were happy to do it. Thank you for being here.
Hey, it's always a pleasure. I always get like a chopping it up with you, and you know, it's a good time. So appreciate you having me back.
I kind of like to always start the same way. It's like, tell everybody about the RSP, where they can get it, what's in it, what just lay it all on the table.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely would love to. You know, it's kind of funny. Like the RSP is a 19-year-old publication that is available at mattwaldman.com. And really, it is a post-draft and a pre-draft. You get a pre-draft that gives you kind of more unadulterated football analysis, scouting profiles, draft history on each of the positions with a fantasy focus, but also very rich in football. And then the post-draft, I mean, and that's 1,183 pages. So most people are like, oh my God, that's crazy, you know? But it's bookmarked. It's kind of a choose-your-own-adventure, and that helps a lot. And then the post-draft, I just got an email today. And it's very quick. And somebody just said, yeah, they had heard me at a podcast and they appreciated the approach. They bought the RSP after the show and they thought the post-draft analysis was way more than they expected. They just started playing Dynasty. And just to paraphrase, they were saying that they had wished they had known about my work before getting started. That's generally what I hear a fair bit. It's the single most helpful thing I've read. And I'm a researcher, so I read a lot. From trades to valuation of picks and players. You get a cheat sheet that basically I take my re-ranking of players from the pre-draft and I compare it to ADPs from 12 different leagues and I give you a sweet spot value. So if I like a player a lot more than everybody else, I'm not telling you to pick that player where I ranked him. I'm showing you where I rank him, but then also how many spots you can wait to actually get him. So, you know, I like Patrick Mahomes, you know, as the first overall pick, but I know you can get him at pick 26 and still have plus or minus five picks to really get him there. That's what I help you recommend. And I can just go over good fits and bad fits. And, you know, when he saw the RSP, he just said it was way more than player profiles. He loved it. And I hype it up, obviously, because it's what I do for a living. But the three things I generally hear is, wow, this is better than what I thought, even what I heard the hype to be. I'm a customer for life. And then usually the second year is you should charge more. So that's generally, you can get it at mattwaldman.com.
I would co-sign on everything that Matt said there. And like I've said before, like, I don't feel like my pre-draft rookie evaluation is complete until I've gone through the RSP, and I always look forward to the post-draft stuff as well. We're going to talk on today's show about post-draft movers. We're going to answer some of your rookie and dynasty questions, and then we're going to do something fun towards the end of the show, what I call a couple of rapid-fire round one mocks. Not too much analysis. We're just going to go through. We'll take turns taking the first pick. Maybe we'll do a 1QB in a super flex league and just kind of let you know how, if we were doing a rookie draft and we had all 12 picks, how it would look. And you can kind of work with that information as you would. We will, though. I mean, we've had you on three or four times, so let's still go back to the well. Three questions for Matt Waldman. I think they're all new questions. When you're making adjustments after the draft, and we're going to talk about some of the things that you weigh more heavily or less, but I want to talk specifically about year one opportunity. Does that matter to you at all? And a couple of guys I think that you could use as examples. Like a lot of people see Rome Odunze goes to the Chicago Bears. He's got DJ Moore. He's got Keenan Allen there. Does that impact what his dynasty value is? On the flip side, Michael Penix gets much better draft capital than I was expecting, at least. Is a top eight pick at, as a quarterback. That's fantastic. But they're paying Kirk Cousins for the next 2 to 3 years. Does that matter at all in terms of how you're ranking these guys post-draft?
Really, what it can matter, and it can be minor adjustments. I mean, again, if Rome Odunze were in a lot of other classes and they didn't have a Malik Nabers or Marvin Harrison-like talent, then it wouldn't matter at all, okay? Right. Because he's far and away one of the better talents at the position and in the class. And maybe his short-term opportunities going to be more about high efficiency as opposed to high volume. So you would kind of weigh that maybe a little bit, but not as big of a deal. Maybe in contrast, a player like Michael Penix Jr., then I'm going to look at contracts. I'm going to look at injury. I'm going to look at the fact that Kirk Cousins, who basically is 36 years old coming off of an Achilles tear, and my buddy Brandon Angelo, who I do work with on a podcast, who's an athletic trainer to pros, basically says, look, the way that he torques off that foot to be able to throw may be an issue, may undermine his accuracy, or may be a bigger issue than people realize. And that contract's front loaded for 2 years. So really, you know, Michael Penix is actually a more of a need pick. We may get into that another time. But to me, it's like, it may change players more at the very top of your board by they may move up or down a few spots, but they'll stay in the same tier most often, as opposed to players who are much lower and get an early opportunity. Generally that doesn't change as much for me. Like Drake May is probably going to get an early opportunity. I'm not a big believer in his situation. And I look at that and go, he's getting thrown into the fire. So If anything, I might have been even a little lower on him.
Okay, awesome stuff. So let's jump into these players. Who was your biggest riser after the draft?
And here's a good example of why, like, maybe playing opportunity doesn't matter as much. But Marshawn Lloyd was probably one of my biggest, because the problems he had, I saw on tape, where he fumbles the ball an amazingly high amount. And he has some immaturity issues about decision-making on the field that you would see from guys like Travis Etienne early on in his career, or Rashad White early on in his career, trying to bounce things outside. But when you see that you have Josh Jacobs, who, yeah, I know he had a bad year last year behind an offensive line that wasn't great because the quarterback play was even worse, that impacted his production. But he's still a good running back who understands how to play the game. And he, right now, he's got, I think, a 3 or 4 year deal, but they have an out after 1 year. And then A.J. Dillon is a solid backup who can contribute and sometimes has some big games. And people thought, I'm one of them, thought that he would have offer a lot more down the line. But Marshawn Lloyd's in that situation where he can play maybe that early career Aaron Jones complimentary role. And if he can't beat A.J. Dillon, to do that early, then you know it's probably that there's some deeper stuff going on with Lloyd's game that needs to be reworked, and he needs a little bit more time. But it's very possible that Lloyd could play well enough right now while being insulated by two experienced backs in a good offense that by next year they could say, yeah, Josh Jacobs, we're going to go ahead and take the out, and Marshawn Lloyd's going to be the guy. So for me, seeing that he's insulated year one and not thrust into it, but there's a real chance for a big ramp up year two, he moved up significantly on my board.
I will say, and this will go a little bit off the dynasty talk, but I think it's about the players still. So, because one of the other things that I do at CBS is I build projections and maintain them throughout the year for the season and then for individual weeks. And I struggle with that Packers running back situation because the last couple of years when people have been healthy, it's been way too close for what we like to 50-50 between Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon, even though Jones has been so much more efficient. And when they first brought in Jacobs, I thought, okay, they'd like to just have a workhorse back now.
Yeah.
And then they brought back Dillon, and then they drafted Marshawn Lloyd. And so I wonder if it turns into, I don't think it's probably going to be a three-headed monster, but it seems like it's either Jacobs in a 60-40 split with more of the heavy rushing down work and Lloyd helping out, or the flip side, Jacobs in the 60-40 split with him doing most of the passing down stuff and Dylan handling the dirty work. Do you think we just kind of have to wait and see on that?
I think you're right that we have to see, but I think you're looking at, I think the way you're looking at it makes a lot of sense for people to pay attention to in that respect. And I think from a, yeah, it's much harder on a redraft standpoint, but when I look at the out, I look at how Dylan's been, you know, I have Dylan in a lot of leagues as just somebody I drafted in Dynasty and sat on. But I look at this and I think this is the opportunity. This is where the Packers said, just like with Jordan Love, it's better to draft a quarterback when you already have a quarterback. It's the same thing. Maybe it's better to draft certain skill players when you already have some, because they've been kind of tooling around with trying to find that third back to grow and farm, and they haven't been able to do it. They've been doing it later rounds with Patrick Taylor and guys like that. They had Goodson, who's right now over in with the Colts, who I think they totally kind of flubbed that one. They should have kept that kid, Tyler Goodson. I think Tyler Goodson's going to be interesting in Indianapolis at some point. But yeah, Lloyd to me is that player that it's just from a dynasty perspective. What this tells me is the Packers realize that they have a really high upside player here, but he's not quite ready for prime time. And that's just a smart way to go the way they did it.
And learning from Josh Jacobs is probably a pretty good guy to watch and see how, that guy gets all the touches. If I do it like he does it, I get the ball. Okay, I'll do it like he does it. I think that's the way that works a lot across a variety of sports. Let's flip to the other side. Who was your biggest faller after the draft?
You know, probably two guys, and they're not that surprising, you know, but they're guys that were sleepers of mine that I'm still recommending for people to get, but I knew that they weren't going to be drafted as high as I rated them. And I've pretty much said it in their scouting profiles. They're both running backs as well. Blake Watson, the Memphis running back who transferred from Old Dominion, who's with the Broncos. Listen, I like Jaleel McLaughlin, and I was writing about him months and months before that draft. But Blake Watson is a more complete version of that type of back. He's almost as fast. He's a better pass receiver. He's a good blocker, and he can run between the tackles with a little bit more pop, you know, even though he doesn't have that quickness, that short area quickness. But that fits into what Sean Payton wants to do with his running game, is he wants guys out of the backfield who can catch the football. So I would still say Blake Watson is a little better than Audric Estime in terms of a value, and you can get him at the end of a draft if you either as a priority last, you know, late round pick in the last round, or take him in free agency. And then I'll even say Dylan Johnson with the Titans. I was a big fan of his game, and I knew he wasn't going to get drafted high because he doesn't have great speed. But you look at Tony Pollard and Tajay Spears, and they're essentially similar style of backs, even if you can kind of break apart where they're different and have some clear differences there. They fulfill a similar role. Hassan Haskins, I don't think, is really the answer for the big back role. And I don't think Julius Chestnut really is either. Dylan Johnson to me offers probably a chance to be in a more, compact size Derrick Henry-esque role if Derrick Henry weren't a superstar. Like if you want to say, let's put a guy in the goal line, short yardage, and then let him grow into the passing game too. I think Dylan Johnson provides a lot of that. And within a year or two, he could be a guy again, if you're in a big roster league and can sit on him in a year or two, either Pollard or Spears are not going to be in that lead role. And it's most likely going to be Pollard who's going to be gone. And it could be the Dylan Spears show if they can find a quarterback. So again, don't go too early on this one because, Will Levis, still a lot of questions.
Right, right. Well, we got some more questions, but let's take our first break.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
So we had a discussion, 5 weeks ago about Malik Nabers versus Marvin Harrison. And that was a discussion that went on for months in the Dynasty Fantasy community. And then it seemed like when draft day happened, the discussion mostly ended. Marvin Harrison went to Arizona, where we were all kind of like, we were just hoping, don't draft him, New England. He went to Arizona. He's going to be Kyler Murray's number one wide receiver. Everybody's like, yay, Marvin Harrison, wide receiver one. Malik Nabers goes to the Giants. He's going to be playing with Daniel Jones. He's still wide receiver two, but I don't see as many people ranking Nabers over Harrison. I wonder if maybe you would tell them why they're wrong.
I don't really think. Well, I have ranked Nabers over Harrison, and yep. I kept him there.
I know.
So that's cool with me. To me, if you pick Nabers, Harrison, or Odunze, and even Ladd McConkey, I would add to that list now. If you pick any of those guys first among the receivers, I have no argument with you. I think there's arguments, good arguments for all of them. So the argument for Nabers is this, is that they don't have a quarterback right now in Daniel Jones that they feel great about, or Daniel Jones or whatever that Nabers called him accidentally. But Drew Lock is still kind of interesting. And when you look at Daniel Jones coming off the ACL tear, there is an injury clause in his contract that Paul Perdikizi over at Saturday to Sunday brought up, who's a big Giants fan, that they may just decide to play Drew Lock because Daniel Jones, he's got guaranteed money coming if he gets hurt. And they may not want to mess with that injury guarantee to that level. And Lock is a better vertical thrower, if you ask me, from just a natural on film standpoint, maybe not from a tracking standpoint lately, but I think that he has more to offer that can be good for Nabers. He's a little better in the pocket than Jones has ever really been. And Nabers is going to be the man just like Harrison. And unlike Harrison, this is really the reason I have Harrison lower is maybe more because of Harrison than Nabers.
Yeah.
Is that I think the Giants will either get a better quarterback play out of Drew Lock, or they're going to find a quarterback in free agency or hopefully in the draft. And there's a little risk there that with the draft, that with that low hit rate, that it may not happen. But there are a number of wide receivers that have worked out just fine without great quarterback play. And I think he's skilled enough to be that. Whereas with Harrison, he's going to be the man right away. And while he's got some decent weaponry around him, they're still somewhat on the young side, especially on the outside at wide receiver like Michael Wilson. Are they really going to take enough pressure off him? He's going to face the main corner every week. And there's some things with Harrison's game. He opens up his body way too soon at the line of scrimmage. And while it didn't hurt him at Ohio State, he's not facing Michigan defenders who will eventually be good in the NFL. But what that Michigan defender is right now and what he's going to be in 2 or 3 years with NFL work is light years different. And I think that he's going to experience getting jammed a little more often. And while he works hard to get free late in routes, that's going to be a little bit difficult. And also some of the tracking stuff he has where he's great over the shoulder, not so great facing up the ball, knowing when to use his hands. And I think he's going to be one of those guys that we're splitting hairs. We're talking about the second and third ranked players on my board. Okay.
Right.
But still, if we're going to split hairs like that, I would say Malik Nabers, I think, still has a chance for a little bit more upside, whereas Harrison's upside and downside are a little wider. I could see Harrison having like a Larry Fitzgerald rookie season, which most people here listening probably don't remember, but it was like 780 yards and 10 touchdowns. It wasn't the 1,400-yard season. And I think people are looking at Harrison like he's the next Randy Moss, T.O., yep. and they're trading the house to get this guy. And I would just kind of say he's really good, and he might be worth that eventually, but I wouldn't trade that much for him, especially in this draft climate with the receivers we have.
There's a lot of options. Now, I want to ask one question on Nabers, kind of a follow-up, because we've seen Devontae Adams, like Aaron Rodgers misses a few games in Green Bay. Adams averages like 120 yards a game. We see him with poor quarterback play a couple of years ago when Derek Carr got sat. Devontae Adams just goes bananas. We've also seen Terry McLaurin really kind of never reaches potential, or maybe he did, and his potential is not as high as we thought it was, but because of poor quarterback play. Do you see Nabers as more of one of those guys where he's just going to elevate whoever he's playing with? And is that true even in year one?
I think he's going to elevate who's playing with, because he's much more of a Devontae Adams type player as a route runner because of how well he can win one-on-one against man in a variety of ways, and how good of a pass catcher variety of targets and can run after the catch. McLaurin's kind of more of this vertical threat who can run some dig routes, and he can run more than that. But his pass catching, I would joke that he has not only maximized what he's done as a pass catcher, but he has exceeded any expectation that any wide receiver coach would ever have for a player who does not use good technique. He is literally the exception to the rule. I call him the bumblebee of receivers because of the laws of physics, bumblebees shouldn't fly. By the laws of wide receiver like technique, he should not be able to catch a football. I mean,
so he is not, yeah. Unlike Josh Jacobs, not a veteran that you want to put a rookie behind and say, do it like that guy.
Yeah, exactly. Not exactly. Not. But at the same time, Marvin Harrison Jr., what's funny is his dad was the same way. Mm-hmm. Watch Marvin Harrison Sr. highlights, and he claps and traps everything. Yep. Like, and Cortland Sutton can barely hang on to do that, you know, but Marvin Harrison Sr. was great at it. So not many receivers can do that well.
Right. So let's move over to running back, because it's another position where it feels like we got, whether it's the right consensus or not, we have a little bit of a consensus forming pretty early after the draft. There were a lot of people who said, you know, if it wasn't for the ACL injury, Jonathan Brooks would be the clear number one back. And the NFL said, you know what, with the ACL injury, Jonathan Brooks is the clear number one running back in this class. He goes to the Carolina Panthers with the second pick of the second round. And I see, like, most people now see Brooks as a late first-round pick in most rookie drafts. Maybe in Superflex, they'll drop him early in the second. Maybe some people want to move him up, like myself, to that 7 or 8 range, just because I don't – unlike wide receiver, this was not a great class for running backs. What other running backs after the draft, besides Brooks, do you think should be top 24 picks in rookie drafts?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few. So – I think Trey Benson is the obvious one for a lot of people, because with him behind James Conner and Michael Carter, he's got enough of a buffer year one, but at the same time, you can see a clear path to being a contributor, if not a lead back in year two. And he fits what Arizona wants to do, which is a lot of gap plays. So he doesn't have to be much of a, technician to set things up. Because he's right. Just setting up one crease and hitting it hard, and he's good at that. So that's good. Blake Corum, I still like, and I think he's still one of the safer picks in terms of what he can do athletically, but he enters a shaky situation because Sean McVay is very scheme adherent and kind of stubborn about his scheme. Like, he's kind of like the successful version of Matt Nagy. I bet he has glamour shot photos of all his schemes in his basement too. And when teams foil it, he still looks at it and probably prays to it, like the guy in Major League who prayed to Jobu, you know, to get a hit. You know, I think that this is kind of what Sean McVay's all about there in that level. So, you know, he had a good back in Zach Evans. I was told by somebody who knows these running backs pretty well that all the running backs in that room were like, Zach Evans is the guy. Last year, we don't know why he's not getting playing time. So they take Blake Corum. he's an upgrade to Kyren Williams as a player. He's a little faster. He's a little more, he's a little better, I think, all around in terms of just decision-making and creativity, but being efficient. But we'll see, you know, there's a little bit of that element of, is Sean McVay going to be stubborn about this and keep Kyren Williams because, you know, long-term. But I see this more as kind of like a Chester Taylor, Adrian Peterson situation without where I'm not saying Corum's Adrian Peterson, right. But well, Chester Taylor had 1,500 total yards a year before Adrian Peterson came. And he still had 800 yards and I think 7 touchdowns the year after that. And Peterson had like 1,300 yards that year. I could see this playing out where it's a split year one. And then Corum's really the man after that. And then Jalen Wright, I think, is a still very much worthwhile. I compared him to Raheem Mostert as a player. Dolphins obviously saw similar. And I think that it's going to be the Jalen Wright Achan show in terms of like how that split up, with Wright being the kind of the volume leader and Achan being the horizontal field stretcher that they run across the field, as well as do some, you know, some change of pace stuff. And I'll add Kamani Vidal as a guy that, I'm not saying you should draft him in the top 25, but I have him ranked within there. You can probably get him in most cases just after the 25th pick, probably within plus or minus eight, you know, 6 to 8 picks. And this, I've been a fan of him. He was in my top 5 or 6 backs pre-draft. The Chargers are a great situation for him because J.K. Dobbins, I mean, I'm sure they were waiting to see if he passed certain milestones to get him, and he did, so that's fine. But he's on a one-year rental. They're hoping that maybe this is it for all the injuries, you know, that he's had in his NFL career. And maybe by some miracle, he can be 95% of what he was or even better. And if he's that, he's one of the most electric backs that could come into the league. But it's very doubtful.
Right.
Kamani Vidal has a really good chance to be really like the Isaiah Pacheco type of mid, you know, late round guy who elevates up the depth chart.
I will say with the Corum situation in Los Angeles, the nice thing is McVay doesn't seem to be quite as stubborn about individual players, because no. I think as much as he likes his schemes, I don't know that he thinks they matter that much. It's just who will do exactly what I've designed the best.
That's true. That's a good point.
So hopefully, like, it's not going to take Kyren Williams making but one or two missteps. If Blake Corum's doing the right thing, he'll get that chance. The problem will be if he does get that chance, we won't know if McVay will be ready to replace Corum in 3 to 4 weeks. But no, I like the Corum situation. I wonder, you mentioned with Miami, if they have real concerns about how many times they can give the ball to Achan in a given season.
Yeah, I think they do. I think that they've, and it may not have anything to do with what Achan has or hasn't done, even though the injury that he had last year certainly may confirm some of their, or validate some of their thoughts when they drafted him. But I think they just see this as Mike McDaniel's philosophy is, look, let's get as much speed on the field as possible. Let's stretch them in every possible way. This guy gives us a chance to do that. And we don't need to use him at a high rate because he's a smaller back, you know? And so I think that's really all they're looking at, is that Raheem Mostert's a very good downhill gap runner. And why not use him in that capacity and get the most out of him? And let's get another back like that who compares favorably, can develop. And Achan can always, we get managed touches out of him because he helps us more on offense even without the ball than he does with just high volume. His presence may be the bigger thing, is the volume of his snaps is better than just the volume of his touches. And that's not great for fantasy, but knowing that may help you in terms of how you evaluate these guys fantasy-wise.
Well, one of the picks that I thought was the strangest in round one, or just that I totally whiffed on the possibility of it happening, was Brock Bowers to the Raiders. Just because, they don't have a quarterback, and they did have a tight end. Now they have a better tight end. Where are you taking Bowers in tight end premium leagues, and how long do you think it takes before we see him as just an absolute must-start tight end in this league?
You know, that's a great question. I think the real answer is, to answer your first question, was that I think that they really wanted Michael Penix and they couldn't get him.
Yeah.
They were one of the teams rumored to trade up. James Palmer, I think at NFL.com, you know, or NFL Network mentioned that. So in terms of Bowers, Mayer, I really didn't understand the Mayer hype, to be honest. Like, I'm good young tight end, but like, I'm not, you know, this is going to trigger some people when I say it. He's closer to Gary Barnage and what Barnage did in his best year than he is to being like what Brock Bowers is, probably mid-level Brock Bowers. He's not very fast. He's not a great man-to-man guy, except in like tight, in like the red zone situations where you have a compressed field. He's good in those areas. He's a good zone player and he's a solid blocker. Bowers is really a combination of what, you know, Vernon Davis and Aaron Hernandez could do on the field. He can play every role that you need him to play at, except the big inline tight end. And even there, he can help you out enough with double teams to be successful. So the quarterback's a big scenario there. What's going to happen? I think at worst, Gardner Minshew can at least get Brock Bowers within 600 to 800 yards and probably 6 to 8 touchdowns year one, which is very good.
Right.
I mean, we're talking about maybe even like top 24 to top 30 rookie seasons ever for a tight end. That doesn't sound like that would be the case, but it is. But whether they get their quarterback, you know, whether it's Aiden O'Connell and they find out he's really advanced and he's great, or they draft or get a free agent, Brock Bowers, to me, he's a guy that you invest in and you just wait. You be patient. Right. Kyle Pitts was that guy to me, and now they've got two quarterbacks now that can feed him the ball at a high level.
Yeah, I think and I don't know if this is the right way to look at it or not, but I do get a little bit scared about situations like the Raiders and the Giants, because it's not just that they don't have the quarterback of the future, but I don't think they have head coaches that are going to allow them to be in position to draft the quarterback of the future, or at least the top two or three. Yeah. Anytime soon. I don't see Brian Daboll winning fewer than 5 or 6 games. And I think Pierce is probably going to win more games than people are expecting as well.
That's true. I'd say if you're someone that's trying to play low mistake fantasy football, then Brock Bowers is probably not the pick for you. Because you're probably more of a conservative drafter, maybe conservative with trades, conservative with a lot of things that you do. And if that's okay, if that's your style, then he's probably not your guy. And the argument that I would add to what you make here is that if only one out of three quarterbacks that are drafted in the first round hit, if you want to look at the Cleveland Browns or the Tennessee Titans or even the Giants recently, it's not about, in 3 or 4 years, they're going to have a good chance at a good quarterback again. Steve McNair was the last good quarterback in Tennessee drafted in the first round that they had, or even drafted that they drafted. Steve McNair, the last time Steve McNair was playing football in Tennessee, my daughter was like in grade school and she's a retired Marine with a baby now. So, just to give you some perspective on Tennessee's quarterback situation. So if Brock Bowers could go his entire Raiders career and not have a good quarterback if they keep him there. But, I would say I'm still a believer in talent if you play a little bit less conservative,
Right.
But, yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that was, it's a great way to frame it. Now I do want to take just a second to ask about the other guys at this position, because listen, this is the place where there's no consensus right now. There, before the draft, there were Ben Sinnott guys and there were Theo Johnson guys and there were Jaheim Bell guys and all 3 or 4 other names. And after the draft, there's still Ben Sinnott guys and Theo Johnson guys and Jatavion Sanders guys. Is there any way for you to differentiate really between these guys? Are they all just kind of in the same tier and pick your favorite?
Yeah. My favorite on talent is Ben Sinnott, but I am really a little scared of his situation, because not only just Zach Ertz being there, because Zach Ertz is older and he's in the twilight of his career, but Cliff Kingsbury's scheme, the best singular performance for a tight end during his time in Arizona was a 588-yard season by Ertz. That's it. Everyone else either maybe they combined for about 500 yards, but didn't get anywhere close to anything that would look like great numbers. And then he's getting compared to Kyle Juszczyk and George Kittle. If it's Kyle Juszczyk that he's going to get used like, forget it. Like, that's just not, you know, that's great for football. It's not great for fantasy. So he's dropped a couple of spots for me, but on a basis of talent, I still like him, but I'd rather him fall a little bit lower so that I can take him at a value compared to his ADP. Jatavion Sanders, he's an upgrade to Tommy Tremble. Tommy Tremble was always a fullback. I don't really, you know, that was, I think that Golden Dome logo scouting got a lot of people excited. But Jatavion, I'm an UM guy. I went to school at UM. I'm not a Notre Dame fan, you know, but seriously though, Jatavion Sanders, I think, can give you maybe a David Njoku guy who roams the open zones and then gets yards after the catch. And in a couple of years, that may work out reasonably well if they can continue to upgrade that offensive line. My favorite guy of the bunch now may be Cade Stover, and that's more of a long-term wait. Stover to me is like a plus version of Hunter Henry, of what Hunter Henry could have been maybe if he had Phillip Rivers for a little bit longer, you know, and he wasn't in the Patriots wasteland. Right. But Stover now with Stroud, that's nice. Not year one because they've got Schultz. But I think, you know, Schultz's contract ends in 2025. The end of 2025, and most of the receivers are not under contract in that passing game other than Tank Dell right now. I'm sure Collins will get extended, but other than that, Stover could be one of the top three options. Very good pass receiver. So, you know, for me, the tight end class after Bowers, if you're going to go for the best option, you know, it might be the lowest value option, you know, the one that the lowest ADP, the highest potential value. I would say guys like Eric All, who you know you're going to have to sit on and see if the injury works out.
Yeah.
And that he's not, if the injury is not as big of an issue, he's going to be underrated because he's one of the more talented tight ends. Johnson, I get, but, you know, he's probably more, again, you're looking at the quarterback scenario and this offense. And I feel like that he still has a fair bit of work to do with his game to become a one-on-one option. And it's the guys who win one-on-one who are like the top tier fantasy guys. And that's where his weakness is the one-on-one game.
Right.
So yeah, this, I would say you're better off with receivers and tight ends. I mean, receivers and running backs right now, if you're looking for value, unless you're willing to go, you know, maybe Eric All or Theo Johnson and just take a stab late and know that you're not. And I would say Stover's in that range too, because Stover, you can get like early fourth round.
Right.
So that's not bad either, but Sanders and Sano might be a little pricey.
And that was one of the things I think we talked about back in April was like, I expected once we got draft capital and found out who the second tight end was, that one of these guys would move up to the end of round two in just regular drafts. That's not happening. It's only happening in tight end premium, at least the drafts that I'm in. And what you said there about round four, I think is the key. What I'm seeing most of the time is two or three of these tight ends are going in round three. And then two or three of them are falling to round four. And my preference right now is just which ones fell to round four, because I want to use the round three picks on somebody else. Yep. I don't want to take any of these guys there. I'll take the tight end or two that falls into round four. We're going to do something a little bit different now. We've not done this before, so if it busts, it's all my fault. But we're going to do a couple of rapid fire round one rookie mocks. So I'll let you go first. We will do a super flex mock first, and then I will take the first pick in the one QB draft. And all you have to do is just tell me who you're picking first. I'll pick second, you pick third, and we'll do 12 picks. How does that sound?
Sounds good to me. Caleb Williams.
I'll go Marvin Harrison.
Okay. Then I'll go Malik Nabers.
Okay. And I will go with Jaden Daniels. And I think those will probably be close to the first four picks in most super flex rookie mocks. So we've got Williams, Harrison, Nabers, Daniels, who's fifth?
I'm going to take Odunze.
You're going to take Rome Odunze? I'm going to take J.J. McCarthy, and I am trusting scheme over player, but man, I feel like you could dump 40 quarterbacks into a system, that system with Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison, and they just end up being good.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm going to take Ladd McConkey. I think he might end up being the production leader as a rookie.
I love this. The number one wide receiver for the Chargers this year?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, and I will take Jonathan Brooks. I think I was moved by the fact that the other running backs fell a little bit for me. He really stands out at this position now.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great pick. I will probably take at this point, I'm gonna go with Brock Bowers and believe that talent wins out.
I will take Xavier Worthy.
No surprise, you know. So I would have taken him. Those are the two I bounce between, honestly, is Bowers and Worthy. I'll go ahead and step up to the plate and take Brian Thomas at this point.
Brian Thomas is pick 11, I believe. Yeah. I didn't keep track very well, but it has to be because you had the odd pick. And so with the 12th pick, and I think this is as far as he will fall in Superflex, but I will take Drake May with the 12th pick. You were not a huge fan of Drake May. I don't think before the process he went to New England, which I don't like very much. Do you think he's going to start week one, or do you think he's waiting behind Brissett?
I hope he's waiting behind Brissett, and I hope New England means what it says when they said they could start him all year. That gives him – he needs at least a year on the bench. That will give him the best opportunity to do the Jordan Love plan, because if they say they're going to do the Jordan Love plan and put him and rookie receivers together right away on the field, that's not the Jordan Love plan. That's a botched Jordan Love plan. No, if I was – and you can notice I didn't pick a single quarterback after Caleb Williams.
Right.
Notice that if we were in a slightly deeper league and had a couple more picks, I would have run up to the podium to get Michael Penix, only because I'm a believer that development time is really beneficial to most players. And I thought Penix was the guy that needed the least development time after Caleb Williams, but is going to get the most. Right. And that's only going to be a good thing for him.
We didn't talk about this guy yet, so we should at least mention it, because I think he might be the opposite of Michael Penix, and it's Bo Nix. And I'm pretty sure that when I talked to you, I joked about this happening, because it was the second most common joke that I had. The first was Blake Corum to the Chargers, which didn't materialize. But Sean Payton, I expect, is going to plug Bo Nix in week one and just try to make it like the pre-programmed Madden. We're simulating, but I've picked all the plays. Go there. Can Bo Nix do that this soon in his career?
Yes, I actually think he can. I think he's honestly, like, people look at quickly. I'll just say this: most people look at quarterbacks, and you hear it in fantasy analysis a lot too. Is that, well, you know, quarterbacks low hit rate, it's murky. You might as well go with the guy with the big arm, with the big production and the big body, and he's got the most. And really, what they say is he's got the most upside. But really, upside for quarterbacks, from my experience, has been what's between here and do they just have the baseline of the stuff that everyone else just drools over?
Yeah.
You know, Bo Nix has the baseline for what you need for an arm. He has the baseline you need for an athlete. But what he does do better than, honestly, Daniels, McCarthy, and May right now is, and I like a lot of aspects of those guys. But what he does better is he knows himself and knows when to throw the ball away, knows when to throw when he takes chances with, you know, working outside the pocket, where to make some risky throws and where not to. He's very good in a timing passing game, and that fits with what Sean Payton wants to do. And while the surrounding talent isn't all that enticing right now, I think that he's a player that, you know, if Mims excels, if Mims takes the next step, if Franklin hits the ground running, we may not be talking about, oh, this Denver Broncos offense isn't all that awesome. So I don't expect Bo Nix to be a great fantasy pick this year, but I expect him to survive it. I think there were three quarterbacks who I think could survive a year one catastrophe. And I think Nix is on the lowest end of those three, but I think he could do it.
Okay, that's we're a lockstep on that one. Let's do a quick one QB rapid fire. I will start with Marvin Harrison.
I'm going to take Caleb anyway. Again,
I love it.
I believe in that kid. I think he's going to be a top five quarterback for a lot of years out of his career, and that's an anchor for a dynasty position.
Dan Schneier took him at 103 in our one QB mock, and I don't think there's any way he would have done that if Malik Nabers had been there, because, you know, where Dan's affections lie. But I will take Malik Nabers at 103 and feel great about it.
Yeah, I don't blame you, and I'm going to go ahead and take Roma Dunze again.
Okay, let's. You know what? We won't go completely in the same order, but I am going to take Jonathan Brooks again.
Yeah, no, I get it. And then probably for me, you know, I mean, it's just, look, what do you want me to tell you? He's going to get volume. It's probably a PPR league. It's going to be Ladd McConkey again.
Ladd McConkey. And so I will go with, and I think that, do you have Worthy, McConkey, and Bowers kind of all in the same, like real close in terms of tier?
Yeah, they're in the same tier, and I would alternate. I honestly change my mind every few minutes on whether I take Worthy or Bowers.
Right. I think that's that's an important distinction, because a lot of people who listen to this show, I know, are playing in more than one dynasty league. A lot of people have like six rookie drafts they're doing in the next few weeks. And if I had, I would actually rotate, not just like in our heads and where we're trying to put rankings together, but I would rotate in rookie drafts, because I like all three of those guys and I'd like to have a little bit of all of them. So if you had the opportunity to take Bowers and Worthy or Bowers and McConkey back to back in back to back drafts, I'd probably take different guys.
There you go. And like for me, I mean, listen, I tier my rankings, and right, I have seven players in the RSP's first tier. And Xavier Worthy is the lowest player in that tier, and everyone we've taken thus far, other than Jonathan Brooks, is in my top tier.
Okay. So I will take Worthy next.
Okay. Probably, you know, if it's PPR, which it probably is, mm-hmm, I'm most likely taking Brock Bowers again. So
right. And then I will take Brian Thomas, and you have the 12th pick.
Then probably at this point, looking at what we have, I'm going to take Keon Coleman.
You know, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to answer some questions to finish this show up, but give me 60 seconds on how you think Keon Coleman fits in Buffalo.
Well, I mean, first of all, he is a very good ball winner, even though I know there are some metric places that say otherwise.
Yeah.
But the way that I track stuff, he's a very good ball winner. He needs a quarterback who either can fit it into tight spaces or throw anticipatory passes well. And he has both with Josh Allen. To me, he's a fully realized version of Gabriel Davis, and what Davis wasn't, everyone thought he was going to become, but wasn't. He can work inside and outside, so you can get more of that Mike Thomas kind of separation feel if you need him to be that. But he can give you a little bit more of early career Anquan Boldin to the outside, maybe not to that level, but he's very good in the open field. So I think he's going to be one of the top two to three options on in Buffalo, and in that offense, that's fantasy value.
Awesome stuff. We'll take one more break and we'll finish up with some listener questions.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Every sport has their big, juicy controversy. Boxing has the Mike Tyson ear bite. Cycling has Lance Armstrong. Baseball has its steroid era. Curling has Broomgate. It's a story of broken relationships, houses divided, corporate rivalry, and a performance-enhancing broom.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
Broomgate, available now.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
So I want to go through a few tweets here. If you're watching on YouTube and you have a question, I'll try to get to one or two of those as well. So now would be a good time to put those in the chat. We did have a question about Neighbors and Odunze, because it said a lot of people have them neck and neck, yet Neighbors always goes first. In the NFL draft and every mock and real draft I've done, Neighbors goes first. What is it that separates these two that makes it where it's, if it's that close, why isn't Odunze ever ahead of Neighbors?
I think from the standpoint of people who are looking at this, they're they're trying to project for every possible scenario for every team. You know, when it was pre-draft, they were looking at who can do the most at the greatest level of depth. And I would say that Malik Nabers has a more complete set of release packages, more complete set of routes in terms of how he handles man-to-man coverage. And he's nearly as good, if not better, in the open field as Odunze. He's just not bigger, you know? So that's really the thing. And then from a standpoint of fantasy, if we're looking at fantasy drafts, you would probably say that Nabers is going to be the man earlier, so he's going to likely get more volume, whereas Odunze is in a more enviable situation long term. Like, to me, if you led with the argument I'm taking Odunze over Nabers and Harrison because he's going to get to learn from Keenan Allen and DJ Moore and play with Caleb Williams, and Odunze has already, you know, professed what I compared him to, which is that he's a an acolyte of the Davante Adams style of play, and Caleb Williams has also said the same thing to the guy I supply reports to, which is his quarterback coach, Will Hewlett, said he's much more influenced by Aaron Rodgers than anybody. Well, you've got him in like a Davante Adams scenario early in his career, playing with an Aaron Rodgers, you know, aspiring Aaron Rodgers type of player. To me, that's enough to say that Rome Odunze and Caleb Williams are going to be the 1-2 combination for at least the next 5 years.
Absolutely love that. So we've got... John, what are you trying to do here? John says, since the 2024 draft is over, how's the 2025 class looking? And I've not even thought about it, John, but I will give Matt a chance to answer that if he wants to. I think that maybe the question that puts it in better context is that he says, you know, if I have a chance to trade Keon Coleman for a mid-2025 first, that can kind of put in context how we feel about the 2025 class, maybe. Because Keon Coleman, we know, is a late 2024 first. Have you looked at all at the 2025 class? And do you know how you think Keon Coleman's going to stack up to it?
Some. I have some, but I'm going to be honest. Nobody really knows at this point with this class. And they're gonna write articles at the big name places and give you some idea, but they haven't even studied these guys in as much depth yet. So I would just put it this way. In theory, though, my buddy Adam Harstead, the FSWA writer of the year, who I do a show with at my podcast, he would tell you that trading for next year's draft picks, in theory, is usually always better than trading into this particular draft. So I would say with where you're looking at Keon Coleman, as much as I like the possibilities with him as a player, you're still probably going to wind up with as good or better of an opportunity if you trade him away for another pick later.
Good stuff. Is Spencer Rattler worth a third or fourth round pick? And I'm just going to say in Superflex, because I know that I don't believe in one QB he is.
Yeah, I would say... in Superflex, he's worth a fourth round pick. As long as you have expanded roster sizes with maybe a nice practice squad that you can put him on. But if you don't have room to put him on a practice squad, I would tell you the answer is definitively no, because he's not ready yet he doesn't read zones very well. And the NFL is much more complex with zones.
This is not a rookie question. It's kind of a rookie question because it's about a rookie draft. It's more of a dynasty question. But Ben asks, I guess you're starting a new dynasty league. Oh, no. Should I have a rookie draft and a free agent draft separately or together? So for an existing league, and I don't know. I've got a mixed bag on that, Matt, in my dynasty leagues, where there's some of them where free agents are available in the rookie draft, some of them where they are not. I think if I had to lean one way, I would say I prefer they are not, because I like having that free agent period, like right when training camp opens, where the guys that have gotten some hype over June and July are now going to use up somebody's fab. So I'd probably keep the rookies and the free agents separate. Do you have a strong preference either way?
I don't have a preference, and I have the same issue that you do, is that some leagues we do it, some leagues we don't. But I would say if you're a commissioner, maybe the best thing you should do is, if you know this league pretty well, See how your friends are, because like if they're busy and they've got lives that are pretty intense with, like, you know, driving around to AAU basketball games and things like that, you might want to just put it together so that you don't have yet another event. Like if you have trouble getting through one event, without there being like time constraints and people needing delays and they're writing you, we got to slow down the draft and do that because people have lives. And that's great and understandable. If you know that's your league, do it all together, because then you'll just get it done. You know, if you're going to have to make it two separate events and deal with that, that's more of a headache on you and everybody else.
Well, we'll finish up with this one, because I get this question every time I do a mailbag. Every time I ask for questions, I get at least one person. This week we had multiple, so I'll write on it later today. But I want to get your thoughts, Matt. What advice would you give somebody playing Dynasty for the first time this upcoming season? We've got a brand new person entering the Dynasty world. What type of wisdom can we offer them today?
I would say this is that the quarterback and wide receiver are the positions with the most longevity in terms of value that they're going to provide your team. And wide receiver is the most liquid position, meaning that you can trade for them or trade them away. They're the easiest to negotiate trades with. So if you're going to start building a team in Dynasty, I would say wide receiver is the position you want to target the most. And I would tell you that you should stockpile that position. Even if you don't have great quarterback, if you can't get Caleb Williams in this draft, don't hunt for another quarterback. Take the wide receivers. If you've run out of wide receivers, take running backs later in the draft. But if you build at those two positions and you're bad for a couple of years, but you get really strong at wide receiver and running back, you can trade for those other positions you want. And that way you're not chasing hard to get values at positions like quarterback. So to me, it's like wide receiver, and more wide receiver, to the point that you can then make trades for whoever you want.
It's a fantastic time every time we get to have you on, Matt. I had somebody early in the show, and I've heard it multiple times, and it's been when you and Sig have been on. They said, Heath hasn't stopped smiling the whole show. It's no joke. When we talk, I get done with the show and your face kind of hurts a little bit because it was just so much fun. Thank you for being here. Tell everybody one more time where they can find the RSP.
Yeah, you can find it at mattwaldman.com if you want to order directly. I have a YouTube channel, Matt Waldman's RSP Film Room, and I have Matt Waldman's RSP Cast, which is another channel on YouTube for my podcast that I do multiple times a week with guys like Bob Harris and Adam Harstead and Brandon Angelo. And we're going to get Heath back on too, because Bob always gets scared that when I have Heath on that I'm trying to Wally Pip him. So, no, we're having, it's all good. And, you know, it's always a pleasure to get a chance to hang out with you, Heath. You know, we enjoyed having you at Football Guys, and we're proud of you over here at CBS, but, you know, we miss you too.
Great stuff, Matt. Thank you as always for being on. Thank you to everybody who was active in the chat, listening on the podcast. We will be back on Friday with a startup mock draft. It'll be a super flex version, so check that out, 11 a.m. Eastern. We will talk to you on Friday.
The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the Chi?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down! Walk right up to
the sun. A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes now streaming. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with the Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. The subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.